back to Gresh and Keefe on WEEI.
Cora gets a couple option years picked up for 2023 and 2024, so he'll be the Red Sox skipper for at least the next 3 years, on paper at least. Cora's done a fantastic job. Obviously, he did not coach a year ago. He was away from the game after his involvement in the sign-stealing scandal, but he stepped away from the Red Sox, came back in 2021. They made the postseason.
That's what it sounded like on MLB Network. Fran Charles with the... I like how he put the caveat in there. At least on paper, Alex Cora is the manager for three more years.
You know, he didn't coach last year, he says.
I mean...
Yeah, what happened? Of course, he was not allowed to be around baseball for a year, but...
Who did I see, like, a statement from? And they used the phrase sports player.
Sports player.
Like, you could tell that they're like, they're really not on it.
There's a sportsman. All right.
Fair enough. Sports player.
Yeah.
1101 for all you sports player listeners on the WEEI Sports Radio Network. WEEI.com, anytime, anywhere. On the Odyssey app, you can take us wherever you go. We will get to the Hall of Fame ballot, and I promise you, you're only getting maybe 15, 20 minutes of this talk, because I do understand that for a lot of people, it can be mind-numbing schlock when you get into the Hall of Fame. However, if the Red Sox don't have enough pitching next year, we will be the place that you will be calling to bitch to that you don't have guys like Steven Matz or Jairus Familia. So apparently the Red Sox, according to Bob Radford of WEEI.com.
One of the best.
He had a little column up on .com.
Good.
Profiling not only Steven Matz, but like the Jairus Familia stuff. So Steven Matz, who had his whole career basically in the National League, was with Toronto last year. I didn't realize how good his numbers
were.
14-7 with a 3.82 ERA in 150 and two-thirds innings pitched. He started all 29 games last year that he pitched in for Toronto. And Matz was another one of these guys that was supposed to be a part of a bumper crop of Mets pitchers like 7 or 8 years ago that were going to come up and change everything, and really didn't.
No, that was the, Harvey, DeGrom, Wheeler.
Matz.
One of the guys. Matz, and then obviously DeGrom's been a stud.
Conforto came up, that whole group.
They had a mess. But so he proved that he can do it in the American League. Mm-hmm. That would have been one of the knocks on him. Like, all right, you get him out of that division, you get him out of that league, how's he going to do? But a full season with the Toronto Blue Jays. He is 30 years old. So, like, those Mets pitchers have been, like, they're not prospects anymore, right? They've been in the league a long time.
They're in their prime.
But he's 30 years old. He's a lefty. And to me, you're not going to have to give him the kind of money that Eduardo Rodriguez just got.
Bingo.
And can he do something similar? I would say yes. And you got Sale, you got Evaldi, you got Tanner Houck. But as a 4-5 guy, I would 100% be in on Steven Matz. Again, 150 innings last year, that's sort of the way the league is going. Mm-hmm. Like, you can look for 200 inning guys, you're not going to find too many of them. He averaged 5 1/3, a little over that, per start.
I was going to say, at 30 starts, 5 innings, 150 innings, there you go.
You're right
at the minimum.
I'll absolutely take it. I'd be curious what the money is on him. Like, do you have to even go to the Garrett Richards degree from a year ago? Maybe, but that's fine because Richards is gone, Perez is gone, Rodriguez is gone. So you have some money that you do need to spend on starting pitching, and I would 100% be in on Steven Matz.
Well, there's the question is, do you overpay on a short-term deal? Like, not massively overpay, but let's say Matz could go get a contract where the average annual value is, say, $15 million a year, but you don't want to commit to him for 4 years. But you might pay him 1 year at $18 million because you were willing to do it with Eddie Rodriguez on the qualifying offer. So can you just bring in Matz for 1 year and then kind of reevaluate at that point? Or is that even too much?
I think maybe. Now, this is the first time I believe he's hitting free agency, right?
I do believe that is correct. So this might be the Powerball contract.
So he's trying to make money. I mean, he made $5.2 million last year, which, again, for a guy making every turn in the rotation, that is really cheap. I think, for comparison's sake, wasn't Perez $6 million, $6 or $8 million? And we know Richards was like $10-$12 million. So even if you double Matz's salary from last year, I would be good with that. And I'd even be good with 2 years if that's what it takes.
So according to MLB Trade Rumors,
the best
.com,
yeah,
take it for what it's worth.
Uh-huh.
Matz is weighing offers from each of the Giants, the Blue Jays, the Tigers, the Cubs, the Cardinals, the Angels, the Mets, and the Red Sox. This according to John Heyman. The Giants' offer remains on the table even after a re-signing that they had.
Any idea what the money is for many of these teams? Because my guess is so many teams are interested because it's not going to cost a ton, and he would fill out the rotation pretty well. And so did he like his time in Toronto? Then maybe they have the upper hand. Or when you have that many teams bidding, it's just whoever offers the most.
So Toronto did not put the qualifying offer on Mats of 18.4. So their strategy in dealing with Mats was different than the Red Sox in putting it on Eddie Rodriguez.
So I also think nobody would have taken Mats at 18.4, right? Or at least then you would have had to...
You would have had to beat that number.
You would have agreed to a long-term deal, and you would have to give up a draft pick for it. So he's probably not there. Because, again, he hasn't had a great career. I'm not suggesting that. But he is coming off a decent year.
Good timing.
And it's perfect timing for him. And that many teams. So, yeah, nobody's going to pay him $18 million. But he also was just making $5 million. So it's going to be somewhere in between there.
13, 14. I mean, if you could do one for 13 or one for 14, you'd take it right now.
Would you do two for 20?
Yes, so I would. Yeah. I would go two because I think that's, you know, like we talk about in the NBA that you got to have some of those tradable type contracts, and not that you're thinking necessarily of that. You're hoping Mats comes in here, you're a good team, and he's a piece. But if you did need to flip him, let's say, in a year where you have massive injuries and you just want to move on from the guy, or somebody comes along and says, here, we'll give you something good for him, that'd be a very tradable number.
And if you go back a couple of years, too, you know, the last 4 years, so in 2018, he had a 3.97 ERA in 30 starts, 154 innings. Then in 2019, 4.21 ERA, so went up slightly, but he made 30 starts again, 160 innings. The COVID year, he only had 9 games, 6 starts. So I don't know what happened to him or whatever, but he was done.
It was COVID year.
Listen, Rodriguez didn't even pitch. So then he bounced back, and he was in the American League, and we gave you those numbers before. He's right about a strikeout per inning guy as well. So, yeah, I think I would definitely be in on him because you got to fill out the rotation, and I don't want to leave it to just young guys either.
You need another veteran in there.
Yeah, and I think he'd be good.
And it insulates you for injury as well. Now, another Mets pitcher that the Red Sox are interested in is a very polarizing figure, I think, for Met fans. That would be Jairus Familia, who last year with the Mets, 65 games, 59 and a third innings, 72 strikeouts. He did finish 16 games last year, but was not the closer, but is one of those. He is the typical, hopefully he can give you 60 innings and get you 70 strikeouts type guy. The typical late inning dude that you need in the back end of every bullpen. However, there are times where he's going to drive you nuts. And I think you got to understand that with Familia. He's just one of those dudes that can be up and down. But, man, when he's right, he's really good.
Yeah, and you remember it was like 5 years ago he had a situation where he was arrested on domestic violence charge, but then it got dismissed because of lack of evidence. And so I don't know what was going on there. But he's obviously since pitched a lot since. I'm less in on that. I would trust Chaim Bloom to kind of figure out the bullpen. He did it last year. Like when he brought in Robles, you're like, Robles? But then he ended up pitching pretty effectively for him. Even when Barnes fell apart, I think they did a decent enough job there. You can always use more arms. Don't get me wrong. You can always use more arms back there, but I'm not as jacked up about Familia.
If you had to pick one of the two, I'd rather definitely have Mats over Familia. Yeah. Definitely. It is 11:10 with Gresham Kiefer on the WEEI Sports Radio Network. An hour from now, we will talk to the Tennessee Titans color analyst, former Cardinals coach Dave McGinnis, will be with us at 12:10. Make sure you're following the show on Twitter and Instagram at Gresh Kief. And that gets us into the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame.
Here
ballot.
We go.
Now, for those who are in
town. I got the
ballot
right here. I'm ready to rock.
Well, there have been those, and Dan Shaughnessy just joined the show last week to talk about his new book about the Larry Bird era Celtics. And he has said to me both publicly and privately, it's not really worth it to be a voter anymore.
In fact,
kind of sucks. Because there is really no guidance.
Make your own criteria then, and then own it and defend it. You want to give me a vote? I'll vote, and I'll tell you who I voted for and why.
But it's pretty simple. But isn't that flawed in and of itself?
No.
That you leave it to the voter to be like, I hate Manny. I hate the Reuters. But this guy who might have shoved someone down a flight of stairs is okay.
One time. But there's... There's a whole list, and there is a criteria, but it's worded in a way where you're like, all right, character clause and nonsense like that.
Yeah, when you look at the people in the Hall of
Fame, you're like,
what are they doing?
Vote for the best players. Done. Look at that.
How easy was that?
Vote for the best baseball players.
There we go.
Put them in, and then be ready to defend it. And I think you should be able to defend why a guy is in and why a guy isn't. And if you don't like that responsibility, then don't vote. Then turn and be like, you know what? I can't do it anymore. It's so much pressure. I have all these sleepless nights trying to say who was the best at baseball.
Well, Shaughnessy can't bail on his because he's in there.
He's in the damn Hall of Fame.
That's right.
That's true. And don't be like that guy that every year there's the one guy that sends in the empty ballot.
Bill Conklin, I think, used to be that guy down in Philadelphia.
He might have folded, right? One of those guys that did that, I think, finally said,
I think so.
You know what? The game is just, I can't do it anymore. Like, just please. It's not that hard. You like baseball? Yeah, I like baseball. Do you watch baseball? Yeah, I watch baseball. Who is the best baseball player? This guy was. That's why I voted for him.
I can't see the ballot anymore. What am I going to do?
Have your helper vote. Have your little check mark. Send it in.
Your grandson in there, for God's sake.
It's not that hard. It isn't.
No, you're not really going to agree,
but that's where the debate comes in.
Right.
And this is, to me, this is how sports radio probably began. Is you and I, or two people.
Hot dogs.
Well, yes, one hot dog safari at a time.
Hot dogs and baseball.
But it's basically like, Barry Bonds is the greatest player ever. No, he's not. Yes, he is. And then a fight over it. Like,
right?
that's what it is.
Caught now.
Yeah, right. Guy. And then we argue with somebody that calls in. We scream at them. They scream at us. And then you move it right along. Like, who are the best teams and who are the best players of all time? Are really like the root of sports debates, right?
That's right.
And then it has since become nuance. And then I'll tell you, a big day was as soon as they announced the salaries for every player, that also became a massive change. But I mean, the old Baseball Hall of Fame debate, you're right. It can be a tired debate, but at the same time, there is a little bit of a nuance to it, and people are dug in on why A-Rod isn't or why A-Rod is. And baseball is different than the other sports because baseball seems to be the only sport that people actually care about performance enhancers. The other sports, they don't care. Guys in football get popped. Okay, whatever. Move on. Like, it's not going to affect their status. But
Rodney Harrison has been wrapped up in it, and most people will be like, oh, yeah, that's right. He got that shipment of stuff. Like, people forgot about it.
After he won the Super Bowl MVP, there was a debate for a couple of weeks about Julian Edelman Hall of Fame, which I said no, but whatever. That's not the point of the debate. 2 weeks, never once got brought up that he got popped and had to get suspended for four games.
Good point.
Never even got brought up, which I think is fine. But I would bring that same energy over to baseball, and that's why I am a big-time yes on all those guys.
Well, and there's where the rubber meets the road, let's say, because once they put in the rule – Then you gave fans the ability to say, aha, you're now breaking the rule. Like when Faye Vincent does the whole, well, in 1991, I put out a memo saying that, no, it doesn't work that way. Now there was teeth to, that's why, I remember the other day I asked you about Rafael Palmeiro, because for a lot of people, Rafael Palmeiro has Hall of Fame numbers and really should go into the Hall of Fame, but he was one of the guys who not only did the finger wag in front of Congress, but then he also turned around and then got popped. I think he had 535 home runs when he got popped.
Yeah.
And so I have a stat
that'll blow your mind on Rafael Palmeiro real quick.
Please do.
He played 20 years in baseball, in the bigs.
It's a long time. Baltimore and Texas.
Guess how many times he was an all-star?
Probably five.
Four times.
Yeah.
Four time all-star. Like, to me, he has the counting numbers, and those aren't as impressive to me. And so the people are like, well, 500 home runs always gets you in. Like, no, not anymore. And you've seen the home run is going up also. He was never a dominant player. I never once thought, and this was the heyday of me watching a ton of baseball, being a kid, being obsessed with players. He was never the best first baseman. He was always steady. He was good. You're like, oh, Rafael Palmeiro on Baltimore or Texas, good player. But you never once were like, He's one of the all-time greats and belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that position was loaded for period of time.
Like Frank Thomas or Palmeiro. About,
right.
Like not even close.
And the thing with Palmeiro is I think he is worthy to go into the Hall, but I think there are going to be the voters that are going to say, no, dude, you were really the first big-name guy who ended up getting busted under the policy. That's why I think for a period of time there might have been a chance that Manny Ramirez would have gotten in, and he should. He's an unbelievable. He's the best hitter I've ever seen.
Yes.
However, because he got busted not once, but twice that goofy policy, there are going to be a lot of people holding against
him. But my counter to that would be, okay, so first of all, it wasn't illegal for a while. And
correct.
So, like, there was all those guys, like, this is a side example. I'll get to Manny in a second. But Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens never failed a test and never missed games because of a failed test while they were playing.
Correct.
And again, we all have our ideas of what they were really up to, but they never missed a game because of it. They never were punished because of it. Manny Ramirez was, so was A-Rod, both on the ballot. They were punished for it. But when they get popped, the rules were you miss, I forget what it was. Was it 25, 50 full season? Whatever it was.
Something like
that. Like first, second, third offense, or one of them might be
or 1,500, whatever. Yeah.
But not in there is not eligible for the Hall of Fame. It was you miss 50 games. You serve your 50 games, and you move on. If it says in there you forfeit your right to be in the Hall of Fame, then I wouldn't have much of an argument. But it doesn't. So the people that are holding these guys out, like Shaughnessy, are essentially playing God. Because that is not one of the rules. You have decided on your own that no, even though you cannot tell the story of baseball without Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, and yet for 10 years, most of the voters, actually, I shouldn't say most, I think they got over 50%, but enough of the voters said, nope, not a Hall of Famer. I'm going to let Craig Biggio in there, but not Barry Bonds. Pathetic.
The Clemens thing that always got me was that, and there were some of the old school Boston baseball writers that were very much a part of this that I know I bickered with over the years about the, if you didn't do anything, then go talk to Congress. That's exactly what Roger Clemens did. And then you know what it shifted to?
Yeah.
Well, he brought Rusty Harden with him. Why would he hire a high-powered lawyer?
I don't know.
I'd like to, maybe in front of Congress you'd like to have, because it's the, well, you got nothing to hide. You just go talk to him in front of yourself, you see? And it's like, no, it doesn't work that way. But Clemens actually was, and some might say it was because he was, you know, brazen, dumb, even. Some might even go that far.
Yeah.
But he sat in front of Congress, and whether you bought it or not, the guy put himself in peril to go talk to those people and talk about what he did or didn't do.
Remember that whole song and dance with Brian McNamee?
God.
And then the guy's like, well, I have vials in my basement. You're like, from what? Why?
And like, that's when Andy Pettit, you know, came in and did the...
Also on the ballot.
Yeah, Andy Pettit with the... Yeah, I'm very fake. Sorry about all this. I made
crocodile
about
a, tears.
I made about $170 million playing baseball, and it was worth Jim and that needle in my ass.
You'd love
a donation from me, a-holes. Drop the mic and then just walk right out of the chamber.
All right, 2022 Baseball Hall of Fame ballot. There are 30 names on the ballot.
Oh, Lord.
Real quick.
Okay.
I'm going to rip through all these.
Yep.
Ready?
Well, let's eliminate
and then,
a bunch.
And then if we disagree, we can circle back to it.
Shime, write them down.
Write these down, Scrim. Bobby Abreu.
Out.
No. Barry Bonds.
Yes.
In. Mark Burley.
No.
Good player. Out. Roger Clemens.
In.
Carl Crawford.
Out.
Prince Fielder.
Out.
Todd Helton.
Out.
I think he has a case, but I'm with you. Out.
Well, you know what? It's the Larry Walker case.
Yeah, and Walker was probably a little bit
better. And now Helton did play, I do believe, his whole career in Colorado. So that does change it a little bit, but he was a really good first baseman. He might have been the Rafael Palmeiro of the National League.
I was
going
to say, could you make the case?
If you don't put Palmeiro in, it's then tough to put in Helton, because I think Helton only ended up with, did he peak at like 400 and maybe 50 home runs at the most?
He did make 5 All-Star games, so that's one more. He finished with 369 home runs.
Didn't even win an MVP.
Yeah.
Well, that's all right, Shy. I mean, it's hard to win an MVP. He did have a career 316 batting average.
Well, that's
people
something.
Don't care about batting average anymore.
I was just going to say.
No, I'm with you. I'm out.
What was his on base? What was his VORP?
I'll tell you what
that's
his VORP
really
was.
In 2000, he hit 372 in a single season, which is kind of wild.
Yes. It is pretty crazy.
That was when the Mile High there was helping the old
it was before they found the humidor.
Correct. Gotcha. So I'm out on him as well. Okay. Let's see. Where do we leave off? Ryan Howard.
Out.
I'm out. Tim Hudson.
No.
Torrey Hunter.
No.
Andrew Jones.
No. Yeah. He's
a good player, but no.
His first like 8 years, he was on his way. And then after that.
He really was. Here's a tough one. He's been on the ballot before. Jeff Kent. Jeff Kent had a good career.
Jeff Kent should be in, but he's out.
I would not vote for Jeff Kent, but it's funny. This ballot has a ton of one-time MVPs.
Yeah, and Kent was one of those dudes who played second base where you look at the career home run numbers and you say, oh, my God, compared to the position.
377, so he had more dingers.
He raked.
More dingers than Todd Helton.
And not even the best player on his team because he played with Barry Bonds.
And they hated each
they
other.
They did. Barry Bonds had beat that guy's ass.
Tim Lincecum. Good career, but I don't think.
He'll be close, but no.
No. Justin Morneau.
No.
Joe Nathan.
No.
David Ortiz.
Yes.
Yes.
And he's
yes.
going to get yes. in because of Edgar Martinez getting in.
I think we see eye to eye on a lot of these. Jonathan Papelbon.
Nope.
Jake Peavy.
Hell no.
It's on there. You want a Cy Young? Maybe a couple. He had a pitcher's triple crown 1 year. Wins,
really?
ERA, and strikeouts. I believe so, yeah.
All I remember with Jake Peavy is when he came up in San Diego, they were like, his arm's going to fall off. And sure enough, it did after like 12 years.
He had a good year, though.
Wins,
or a good
ERA,
career.
And strikeouts in 2007.
Thank you, Sean. Andy Pettit, the aforementioned Andy Pettit.
Boy, that's a tough one.
He's got a case.
That's
but
on the shilling scale.
Right. I'm going to say no on Pettit.
Probably
but close.
I'd
have to reassess,
you.
Maybe, but right, instant reaction would be no.
For those that are teetering who are part of the BBWAA, that's where the steroid thing might end up biting him a little bit.
AJ Pierzynski.
No. Although, Hall of Fame goofball.
Yeah, he was a bit of
I
a
like
guy. Manny Ramirez.
Should be in, but won't get in.
I say, my vote would be yes. I don't have a vote, shockingly. I should. I've been watching baseball a long time, but don't
well,
have
you us electronics, we can't get in there. You have to.
I've been a fan of baseball over 3 decades.
You have to be an ink stained wretch to be able to like or look like Rob Bradford.
I do a podcast about TV shows. That should help.
Well, that is something. Yes,
again, baseball's on TV.
Digital media.
Alex Rodriguez
in
should be in.
He won't be.
Scott Rolen.
No.
Better career than you think, but
better,
no.
Yep. Yeah. And especially when you compare him to other third basemen. I don't think he got the 400 home runs did Rolen.
I don't know if he did. But
I think he was pretty close. But that's another one of those guys where, like, Kent, if you look at the position and some of the numbers, like, Rolen probably just came closer as Kent was, like, the leader of second base.
He had 316 home runs, but he was also a wizard in the field, whereas Kent was not.
He's got a Dale Murphy-type feel to him. Does
8 gold gloves for Scott Rolen.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Scott Rock and Rolen could pick it.
He could
pick it over at third.
And a rookie of the year.
Yeah, so that helps. Jimmy Rollins.
Maybe?
No, Jimmy Rollins didn't know. Curt Schilling.
No.
I would vote for him. I would.
Him and Pettit are out for me.
I know people have soured on him, certainly post-baseball career.
Can't understand why. I mean, Twitter, wait until I create Trump tweet.
You did, and it didn't go very well.
It did not, but however, we regrouped.
What was that photo that you tweeted out? Or you truthed out? I believe it was a pig defecating on itself.
I think it was me on the 17th hole. Knocking in another one of my putts.
It wasn't.
Great round, 78, just like Chris Scheim and his turkeys when he's bowling.
All right, let's rip through the rest of these. Gary Sheffield.
Nope.
Yes.
Oh!
I'm a yes on Sheffield. I'll sell you quickly.
No on Sheffield.
9-time All-Star, 5 silver sluggers. Mm-hmm. He won a batting title. He won a World Series, and he had 6 top 9 MVP finishes. Good enough for me. And, oh, by the way, 509 career home runs.
Well, that helps. Getting over 500 home runs, especially in that era, definitely helps. I don't think he's going to get in. It's a little Palmeiro-ish in that. He was really good, but there were better.
I think he was more feared hitter. Sheffield was intimidating as hell when he was on the plate.
Punch in the face. There's no question about that.
Sammy Sosa.
Out.
I am a yes.
Sammy Sosa is not a Hall of Famer, just like Mark McGwire on principle.
Sosa better.
Take out the steroids. Those guys, not.
You can't, though. They had plenty of them in there. And Sosa, to me, his MVP finishes. He was a better player than McGwire. If you go back and compare the two, he was a better player, a more impactful hitter. So I'm a yes on him. I know most people aren't. Mark Teixeira?
Nope.
Omar Vizquel? Completely different player.
Sneaky chance to get in.
He's so good in the field.
I'd vote no.
I would too.
But he could get in.
And then the last one on the list is Billy Wagner. No. But he had a great career. But so there you go. Should be pretty interesting this year, especially with guys like Ortiz, because like Manny and A-Rod failed tests. Yep. Ortiz didn't. But neither did Bonds or Clemens, and those guys have been held out. So we'll see.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where the temperature of the baseball writers are, considering they are turning over that constituency. We'll get to some Tom Brady Man in the Arena in a moment. Right now, Chris Scheim is trendy.
Like the show?
Of course you do.
And not that other way, freaks.
Tell a friend about Gresh and Keefe on WEEI.
The priorities were basically playing football and trying to be the best I could be.
Today, the team cut Lawyer Malloy, one of their most popular players.
It felt like I lost my brother.
Ignore the noise.
Super Bowl 38.
Start something. We got to finish it.
In all these games, it took that much to win. That's the difference between being remembered and not being remembered.
Man in the Arena, Episode 2, is up on ESPN+. There was your trailer for Episode 2, and Man in the Arena is the latest from, TB12 Productions? What are we,
sure.
What are we calling it? Chopra, yeah, TB12 probably. Productions?
Could be, yeah. Is Alex Guerrero an executive producer on the project?
I would think so. You might as well rack up those credits. 11:33, uh-huh. Gresh and Keefe. You'd think Giselle gets one, too, for all
this.
Yeah,
why not?
A little bit of her, a couple of bucks of hers mm-hmm. probably got mixed in all this as well. So episode one was really the beginning of Tom Brady. Leaving Michigan, drafted to the Patriots, the whole story of he and Drew Bledsoe. We had a lot of that Bledsoe audio for you last week. And now episode two is kind of like, and I haven't been able to watch it, but it was like, broop, here's 2002, and here we go, we're back up at 2003, and a chance to win a championship.
Speed it right up a little bit. I mean, that's the thing, is if you're going to do a documentary series on Brady, and you want to hit on all the Super Bowls, it's going to have to be a long documentary. It's a lot of Super Bowls.
Well, it is, and yeah, well, there are 10 episodes of this, so.
Yeah, there you go.
I guess I thought there'd be a little more of the Tom Brady story woven in there, but really a ton about Lawyer Malloy, and we remember that not only when Lawyer Malloy went to Buffalo, but remember it was Drew Bledsoe was there in Buffalo as well.
Yeah, that was crazy. That really was, because Lawyer Malloy, if you go back to that time, was one of the more popular players on the team.
No question.
And the Ty Law Lawyer Malloy secondary, and you had like the law firm poster and all that stuff. They were super popular. And you got to remember, yes, Bill Belichick had won a Super Bowl at the time, but he had won a Super Bowl.
Right.
So they were really good, but then they also missed the playoffs in 2002. So it wasn't, we hadn't built up to the In Bill We Trust yet that a lot of fans still have to this day. And I think they ended up using Lawyer Malloy as a big example. Like that really became the first one where a move that you don't agree with as a fan. You mm-hmm. can't believe it, and you wonder why they're doing it. But then to win the Super Bowl that year, you say, well, he's going to get rid of Lawyer Malloy. And we have since changed it to trading Jamie Collins, trading Richard Seymour, trading Logan Mankins. But Lawyer Malloy was the first one that was like, what are they doing? And then he immediately goes to the Bills, and week one they smack him around. And I remember I was going to college at the time in upstate New York, plenty of Bills fans. And week one, 2003, they thought they were going to the Super Bowl. They were all fired up. They couldn't believe it. Could not have gone any better, waxing the Patriots 31-0. But
by the end of that year, the coach was fired, and it was crumbling.
Things
and
changed.
All falling down in Buffalo.
Cap it off with a 31 win over Buffalo, and then another Super Bowl.
Lawyer Malloy was the first guy where you really looked at the salary cap ramifications. That was when Bill Belichick really started to go into the cap, and it was the what has now become the formula for the Patriots in terms of how much they spend on every position. And it's interesting that it is in, believe it or not, the Wikipedia page of Lawyer Malloy, where it says on September 2nd, 2003, the Patriots released Malloy after he declined to take a pay cut. Patriots cleared $5.86 million in cap space with his release. Malloy was supposed to make $4.5 million in 2003, had 4 years left on the deal, wasn't scheduled to become an unrestricted free agent until after the 2006 season, and then turned around and signed a four-year, $15 million deal with the Bills 31-0, and then it all went downhill from there.
But you also wonder, if they weren't able to get Rodney Harrison as a free agent that year, would they have still made that move? Because I think he's what really made him expendable.
And that's interesting, because that really has become kind of the pattern that we've seen now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Sony Michel doesn't get traded if you don't have Ramondre Stevenson.
Yeah,
and you
right.
know you don't have that guy there.
And that's why the Brady and the Gronk decisions were so odd. And I guess Gronk was kind of out of their hands, but they also had it. They should have been preparing for his possible retirement. It was not a secret that he might retire, and they never really replaced either guy. But for a moment, now they never played a game together, but Rodney Harrison and Lawyer Malloy that whole offseason were on the same team. And you're like, oh my God, they got both of these guys? Like, how good is their secondary going to be? And then they're like, oh yeah, Lawyer's gone. I'm like, wait, what? And they just cut him. That's a late cut, September 2nd, whatever you said.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Really right up before the season.
Cut.
And then as soon as Malloy went across the street, so to speak, and went to Buffalo,
I know.
It was on at that point.
But as much as I loved Lawyer Malloy and as good of a player as he was, Harrison's better. Rodney Harrison's
a better
player. Not only was he better prior to, but then he still had plenty left in the tank and was really good for those next two Super Bowl teams.
Harrison was a tackler. Lawyer Malloy was a hitter. And I think that in that 0-2 season, that really started to kind of play itself out. And there were times where I remember Bill Belichick talking about the, you know, working on tackling and things like that. And Lawyer Malloy, because you could do those things back then in 0-2, you could actually hit people and try to, like, you know, knock them out or knock them out of the game or give them a concussion. And he just did that way too much, I think, for really a lot of Patriot fans' likings, too, because that was becoming the narrative on Malloy. It'd be like, well, he tried to knock the guy out versus tackling him, and then you get a little bit of Rodney Harrison, and he did both. He could still hit people, but he would also finish tackles.
I mean, Lawyer had a great career, though, and like by me saying Rodney's better, because I think Rodney's a Hall of Famer.
Right.
Whereas Lawyer Malloy, again, he was a Pro Bowler in four times, but in 01 and 02 specifically. So he was coming off two really good years, and they still were like, all right, see you later. Which is just nuts. And
we look back now and don't think anything of it, but at the time.
At the
oh
time,
word.
I remember it was so crazy because there wasn't that track record yet of Bill getting these shocking decisions right. And that's what led to the Tom Jackson, like, this team hates their coach. And then they were all like, really? Really, Tom? Is that the case? And then 03 was one of their better years, and 04 was even better than that. Many people think the 04 team is the best team they ever had.
That statement actually ended up creating Old Takes Exposed. I don't know if you knew that or not.
That's what started it?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Years later, it was posted at the top of that Twitter page there with Tom Jackson.
That was a good one.
So, Tom Brady, episode 2 of Man in the Arena. Here is Tom Brady talking about his relationship with the aforementioned Lawyer Malloy.
He kind of knew that he was a guy and that the money was coming. So, we had conversations about how to balance life outside of the locker room. And obviously on the field, he had a lot of questions about being in the NFL, all this newfound stardom, relationships. You know, he was just a sponge.
We lived 5 houses down from one another, so he was really one of my close friends on the team. He was older than me. The people really respected him. It's because of his work ethic and his attitude. And I think he really wanted to prove to everybody every year that he was going to bring it every single week. So I really looked up to him in a lot of ways, and I really admired him. That was, for me, that was the one that hit hard. You know, I remember driving home after that happened, and I drove right over to his house. I didn't even know what to say.
He showed up every day, never missed a game, never missed a practice, never complained.
It was the first time that I recognized that this was, you know, a really tough business.
Business.
Yeah, that was absolutely the eye-opening experience for him and for, I think, a lot of the young players on that team. You know, Ty Law talked about it a little bit this morning. He was on with the Greg Hill Show. That was one of his best friends on the team. But he'd been in the league a little bit. Like, he understood what it was. But it is crazy. And then, you know, I know it's not Wednesday, but if you want to do a quick what-if Wednesday.
I like it.
What if Lawyer Malloy played the rest of his career on the Patriots? Let's say, you know, he's good enough and, you know, maybe either they have him and Rodney or Rodney never comes here. Because I think one of the reasons why they brought in Rodney is because they knew there was a contract situation going on with Lawyer Malloy.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's on the team for 2 more Super Bowls, isn't he looked at a little bit differently? Isn't he in the conversation of best safeties of a generation there? Because he came into the league in 96. So even if he just played, and he had a long career. He played till 2010.
Mm-hmm. But ended even if in he, Seattle, right?
But even if he just played, he went to Buffalo, Atlanta, Seattle, but he ended in Seattle. Let's say he's on the 03 and 04 Super Bowl winning teams. Let's say he's on the 07 team that goes undefeated and loses. I mean, he might get a sniff at the Hall of Fame just because he's a part of all those winning teams. And who's to say he doesn't continue making Pro Bowls here?
He and Rodney would have been a disaster playing together on the back end of a defense.
But what I'm saying is Rodney might not have been on the team. If they knew Lawyer was going to sign the contract that they were happy with, I bet in 2003 they don't even sign Rodney.
Interesting. No, that's a great
one. I think it was a leverage play.
It's a great one. If there definitely was some leverage play there. But I really wonder if Bill Belichick was in love with Lawyer Malloy the way fans were. Because why go out and go get somebody like a Rodney Harrison, who was really similar to Malloy, to only then turn around and pop the guy? So I do wonder about him and would he have fit here long term. But look, Lawyer Malloy was a great leader.
Yeah.
You heard Tom Brady there with the work ethic. Like, there was very little to quibble about with Lawyer Malloy as a New England Patriot.
He was a captain of the team.
It was much more about the money.
Yeah,
and we've learned that here with Bill Belichick, the money matters.
Yep.
And that was our first real sort of conk over the head as fans and analysts that, okay, this is the way it's going to go here. By the way, Peter King's Football Morning in America column, if you go down to the 10 things I think in number 7, he has some spoilers, let's say, on Man in the Arena. We won't give those out because we do want people to watch it and enjoy the art that Tom Brady has put together here. But yeah, there's some spoilers in there for those of you who do want to dig in on that. We are helping you win in your daily fantasy league and in your weekly fantasy league. The waiver wire ads are next.
Or Crash and Keith right now on WEEI.
Keith's gonna give you what you need to know. Talk about who you gotta start, who you gotta say, gotta let go. When you be like, whoop, whoop, you doing so good, gonna win your league, but you gotta listen to Rich Keith.
And Chime Time.
In the fantasy breeze. Rich Keith is playing like John Clayton up inside the huddle, and he's got a intimate knowledge of the fantasy game like he and Matthew Berry like to cuddle. If your team got a problem, yo, he'll solve it. Winston Wolfe for this fantasy gauntlet. So pretty pleased with sugar on it. Check out the hook walk.
Chime.
Keith's gonna give you the info you desire. Who to claim from the waiver wire, so your lineup game is on fire. Put him on the board.
Championship.
You're definitely gonna win your league, but you gotta listen to Rich Keith.
And Chime Time.
Finla fainted to see.
Brief. My fantasy team is 1-4. Jeez.
11:49, we help you each and every week try to win not only your daily fantasy league, but your weekly fantasy league. It is time for the waiver wire ads, and it is brought to you by Cars for Kids. Keith and Shime, what do we have this week?
Well, we got week 12 in the NFL. Of course, it's Thanksgiving week, which means you have 3 games coming up on Thursday. 2 teams are on the bye. It is Chiefs and Cardinals. So
oh,
two teams,
boy.
Yeah, that you probably use a lot of guys on, although the Cardinals have had some injury issues recently. But those two teams are on the bye. So here are some pickups, even in week 12. How about this? Never thought I would say this. And maybe I'm getting caught up in the win, but I also really like the matchup. If you need a quarterback.
Uh-oh, Fan Keith coming out here a little bit.
Tyrod Taylor.
Oh, my.
No, T-Mobile.
I'm going with Ty God.
He's T-Mobile also known himself. Turd Rod.
They just beat the number one team in the conference, the Tennessee Titans.
They did.
But more importantly, they are at home against the New York Jets. So that is a great pickup for this week. Again, I'm not saying you play Tyrod Taylor the rest of the season, but for this week, if you're in a pinch, maybe you have Kyler Murray and you're waiting for him, or maybe you have Patrick Mahomes, go with T-Mobile against the Jets.
Interesting that you went with T-Mobile because I saw a bunch of rookie quarterback numbers, and Davis Mills on a bad team with a bad coach has better numbers than Justin Fields. I was just wondering how all that correlated.
Well, it's got nothing to do with Justin Fields.
So we'll get to it a little bit later
on. Their coach isn't about to get fired.
It's got nothing to do with Justin Fields.
I got you.
Talking about Tyrod Taylor.
Well, Keith, I might also be getting swept up in some recency bias here.
Happens to the best of us.
Doesn't matter. I'm going to suggest going to pick up MVS, Marquez Valdez-Scantling.
All right.
4 catches for $123 and a touchdown last week. He got it basically all on one big play towards the end of the game, but he had 10 targets in the game. So if he converts more of those into catches, he'll become a more consistent receiver, and I think there's an opportunity for that, especially if Green Bay starts to play tougher competition. That's scoring more points. It's going to force him to throw the football some more.
I'm going back to the Houston Texans because nothing says fantasy football success like the Houston Texans.
What is going on here?
Well, I'll tell you what. We know this guy very, very well in New England. We know that he's never healthy, but he's currently healthy right now. He won't be. He'll probably get hurt on Sunday.
Marcus Cannon.
Rex Burkhead.
Oh, my.
Rex Burkhead last week against Tennessee. Did I mention they beat Tennessee? He had 18 carries.
He had what?
He didn't, do much with him, but he had 18 carries, and it's all about volume. It's all about touches in fantasy football.
I thought it was all about value.
Nah, I didn't do much with him. I am all about value. Everybody knows that to be the case. But Tennessee's good against the run. I'm sure we'll get into that more this week as they play the Patriots on Sunday. But against the Jets, you can have your way with the Jets. That's what they say about them. So between T-Mobile and Rex Burkhead, you could do worse. You could do a whole lot worse. 18 carries is obviously nothing to sneeze at. It's more than he had all season combined. So if he has a similar kind of workload against the Jets, he could turn that into some points.
Well, Keith, I see you're Houston Texans.
Uh-huh.
I raise you a New York Jet.
How dare you?
How about Ty Johnson? Michael Carter got injured this past weekend. They're going to need to put a running back in there somewhere. Ty Johnson has proven that he's very good in the check down game. He can catch the football. He's also been pretty decent running the football.
So you're going Ty Johnson over Tevin Coleman?
Yes. Okay. I think Tevin Coleman's kind of washed, to be honest. I definitely lean Ty Johnson in this situation. He seemed more reliable for the Jets so far over the course of the season.
And I got a wide receiver for you, and this one is based strictly off of availability.
Got a Detroit Lion you're mixing in there?
Yes, I got a
Josh Reynolds.
I got a Detroit Lion. I don't have. I'm going to go to a good offense that is missing a couple of receivers. So Amari Cooper has COVID-19, the virus. And CeeDee Lamb has like multiple injuries.
Okay.
They have the short week. They, of course, host the Raiders on Thanksgiving. That sweet middle game there. Cedric Wilson, probably going to be the next man up there. Michael Gallup, sure, but he's owned in a lot more leagues than Cedric Wilson is. So
this is a good pull.
And I think Dak Prescott, you could see him having a big Thanksgiving game and lighten it up a little bit. And Cedric Wilson might be the guy torching that Raiders defense, which we all agree the Raiders are probably on the downslide a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
They went through a lot this season. They kind of held their own for a bit. Now at 500, you could see them losing this one and kind of falling out of it. So if you need a receiver, Cedric Wilson.
Could also be big weeks for guys like Tony Pollard, Dalton Schultz coming up
Could be.
With all the injuries that happened in Dallas. My last guy here is going to be Russell Gage for the Atlanta Falcons. He looked actually pretty decent against the Patriots, and he's going to continue to be one of the top receiving options in that Atlanta offense. Now, that Atlanta offense is hit or miss sometimes, but I think they can have a good week this week. I believe they have Jacksonville this week, so good luck with Russell Gage. He had four catches for 49 yards last week, so he could get you something.
This is all very reflective of Week 12 fantasy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, this is
picking,
where you're at.
Picking
the
best players on bad teams.
You are scraping the bottom of the barrel this week. It's tough.
Uh-huh. But there you go. There are your pickups for Week 12.
There you go, folks. And your fantasy waiver wire pickups are brought to you by Cars for Kids. Speaking of pickup, if you donate your car today, it can be picked up as soon as tomorrow. Go to carsforkids.com or call 877-CARS-FOR-KIDS. Remember, that's Cars with a K. We head to the lunchtime hour. Gresham Keefe in 15 minutes at 12:10. We'll talk to Dave McGinnis, former NFL head coach. He's the color analyst of the Tennessee Titans and the Celtics, getting the work done last night. Why have they turned it around in the last 11 games? We got all that next.